Hi there, this is James Swanick, and you're listening to the Swanick Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another Swanick Live. It's great to have you here. And if you are a woman and you struggle with your sleep, then this is for you today. We have a wonderful expert on all things sleep and all things perimenopause and menopause. So if you are a woman going through that or about to go through that, if you're a woman who struggles with her sleep, listen in, because over the next 30 or so minutes, we're going to be doing everything we can to help you sleep better. I'm joined today by Katish Haberfield, who is the founder of Reclaim Your Life with Katish. And Katish, it's great to have you here. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thank you, James. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And you're the founder of Reclaim Your Life with Katish, which helps women understand the life stage transition of perimenopause. So just tell us a little bit about how you got into this and what your area of expertise is.
Yeah, sure. I think with most things in life, we teach what we need to know and what we're going through based on our experiences. And the reason we do this is so that we can help others who are going through similar to us. So for me, it's coming up to my 45th birthday, and when I started experiencing quite dramatic changes in my life was around the age of 42, and I thought, what the heck is going on with me? And so being a little bit of a research geek, I used Dr. Google and started doing and reading all the things to try and figure out, as my kids say, why are you so angry, Mum? I'm not angry. There's nothing wrong with me. And why, when I was having a glass of white wine, why I would suddenly break out in a sweat. And sort of a whole bunch of things started to make sense to me, and I realized there's this unspoken thing out there that's called perimenopause. So perimenopause is the stage before menopause. And you know, women have a really hard time talking about their reproductive life as it is. You know, we're still in this day and age not comfortable talking about words like tampons or pads or periods. And then suddenly there's this process as we're hitting middle life and our bodies start to look different. We're still the same inner child inside, but our outward world is changing a little bit. We all of our ideals about who we are, what we look like, what beauty is, what success is, are starting to morph and to change. And then at the same time, our body changes and it can throw out everything, sleep included. And so I just started to share my experiences and women started resonating that. And we've just been going on a journey together for the last few years to say, hey, I'm having trouble sleeping. Did you realize there's actually a biological reason for that at this time of your life? And to help women go through this journey, I'd understand that they're not alone and they're not going crazy, that they're perfectly normal, and there are some simple tools that can help them.
Yeah, and what's the age group usually where women experience perimenopause or menopause? What's that age range?
Yeah, so perimenopause can start, are you ready for it? Anytime from 35. So 35 to 55, it's quite a big age bracket. And it depends upon your body, your hormones, your level of stress, and genetic factors. 55 is roughly the age women go into menopause. Now, menopause is a difficult term because we can only say we're in menopause once it's been 12 months since our last period. So it's a retrospective term. And then you can get this amazing realization that that's what you've gone through and things start to make sense. So perimenopause is the lead up to that, and it's when changes start happening and women start to feel a little bit not themselves, but they don't have a reason to understand why. And there's actually 35 different things that go on in a woman's body and her brain that are part of the perimenopausal stage. So yeah, it's quite a wide bracket, but 35 to 55.
Yeah, and you've actually created a Facebook group for women aged between 35 and 55, and we'll put the link in the comments wherever you're watching this at the moment. There should be a link down below. We'll put a link there to the Facebook group. And the Facebook group is named Perimenopause and Menopause, Essential Oils and Natural Solutions. It's a private group. So we'll put the link down there below where you can access that. So what are some of the is it correct to say symptoms from perimenopause and menopause, or is that incorrect?
Yeah, well, symptoms is kind of one word that we do use. The medical industry, of which I'm not part of a medical industry, but uses the word symptoms. But the problem with using the word symptoms is it kind of treats it like a disease. And I like to say that it's not a disease. It's just a life stage with indicators that you're out of, your body is changing and that you're going out of alignment with some things in your life. And that you need to take some pause, take care of yourself, and pay attention to what your body's saying to yourself before you get full-blown experiences. I'm from the background whereby I believe and understand completely in the approach of I have a symptom, I have a hot flush and I need something to treat it, but I also believe in the wisdom of learning what's your body's telling you. So what's the actual message behind that? What's the root cause behind it? There will be biological changes and physical chemical changes in your body, but there's also some emotional concepts as well. So it's really a period of time that a woman needs to learn to nurture herself. And that can be really difficult for a lot of women because they've been so busy nurturing their families and their partners and their parents maybe getting older, so they're used to nurturing them, but they've really got out of practice of nurturing themselves and the true definition of self-care.
Mm. So what are some of the signs that perimenopause or menopause has struck then? You mentioned some biological changes, but then you also mentioned some emotional changes as well, it seems.
Yeah, so anger is a really good sign. What happens is that at a fundamental level, our sex hormones change from that age. Men go through this as well, but a little bit later, and it's called andropause. But for women, the changes happen not only in the ovaries but in the limbic system as well. So it's the equivalent to the changes that a teenager goes through at puberty, but it's just for women, and it's kind of like your sex hormones change in reverse. So a lot of women will notice changes in their progesterone levels and their estrogen levels. They will also see a change in the display of their testosterone. And one of the other things that happens is their melatonin production changes as well quite dramatically. So it goes up and down. It can change according to the time of the day, the day of the week, and where we are in the month. But basically, it's kind of like you have your estrogen drops dramatically as time goes by, and so does your progesterone. And when we start perimenopause, generally speaking, we can have high levels of estrogen and low levels of progesterone. And in comparison, our testosterone may stay high. So what we get is the changes in the limbic system combined with the changes in the hormones in the whole uterus and the womb space can bring forward anger, frustration. So that's one of the number one sign is anger and irritability. The things that you would normally put up with or tolerate in your life are suddenly making you blow a fuse. So you're less able to deal with stress and your cortisol levels really increase a lot. Another sign closely linked to that is waking up in the middle of the night. So there's two ways that you can wake up in the middle of the night. One is with a hot flush where you're literally waking up sweating. The second way can be that you can wake up with a panic attack or a phase of anxiety and can't get back to sleep. And that can very quickly spiral into insomnia if you don't have some strategies and tactics to help you get back to sleep quickly or learn to get to self-soothe and to get back to sleep.
I want to dig into the sleep aspects of this in just a second. But is it a common thing that women mistake these, I don't want to use the word symptoms again, but they mistake these changes for something else other than than menopause or perimenopause. Do they mistake it for just, you know, life is just happening, or you know, circumstances, and that they're unaware of the actual physical changes that are going on in their bodies?
Yeah, it's a really misunderstood term because we don't talk about it much. A lot of women will become highly emotional. So they may not only become angry, but they may feel overwhelmed. They may become emotional in terms of cry a lot, especially. And so they may present themselves to the doctor eventually and just be end up a crying mess and not know why they're there. And then what happens is that the doctor goes, oh, she's having a midlife crisis. Let's put her on some antidepressants. Which has been historically the way that you deal with hysterical women, which is where the whole term hysterectomy came from, which is get rid of the woman's womb so that she can function and not be such an emotional mess.
Got it.
Hi there, this is James Swanick and you're listening to the Swanick Podcast.
And that's pretty antiquated thinking, at least in your view, yes?
Yeah, very antiquated, because we have emotions for a reason, right? They're there to tell us that we have lots of thoughts about a particular topic, or something's happening in our lives and we're not processing it, or we want to process it. And, for example, the emotion of anger is a boundary crossing. When you feel angry in life, there's something that has been crossed. Someone has crossed your boundaries, or you have let your standards down and you've let somebody cross your boundaries. And so it's actually a important message to us to really check in with our inner wisdom and see what it is that is creating that emotional response in our body, so that we can actually be doing things that are more in tune with what we should do. Not what we should do, but what we really want to do.
Yeah. There's a combination of a lot of things and how, in my view, of how to handle these things, which don't involve getting a pill from a doctor or taking prescription drugs. I've personally done a lot of self-development programs, you know, from Landmark Forum to Elevate Leadership Community to just, you know, going inside meditation, 10-day silent retreats called Vipassana, a lot of different ways, in my view, that you can resolve, in some cases, childhood trauma. You can resolve a lot of the issues around why you're getting triggered in day-to-day life that don't need a doctor to, like I said before, prescribe a pill for you. A lot of times these prescription pills also have shocking side effects and can do actually more damage long-term than what they may potentially alleviate short term. So certainly I'm in alignment with you there and taking a natural approach, or natural and holistic approach, I would say, and not necessarily trying to resolve issues through prescription medication.
Mm. And James, one of the things I know that you're particularly passionate about is alcohol and the over-reliance of alcohol in our lives. And in perimenopause, a lot of women find that if they don't understand their anger and their frustration and their emotions, they may end up medicating themselves with a bottle of wine.
Yeah. When you said you know that I'm very passionate about alcohol, I was like, well, that's actually not quite correct. I'm very passionate about people not drinking as much alcohol or quitting alcohol.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
I wanted to make that distinction there. Yeah,
but passionate about the role that alcohol plays in your life in a negative perspective is what I mean. So, and interestingly, during perimenopause, with all the changes in the hormones, the act of simply drinking alcohol can actually induce a hot flush. So drinking alcohol can be a very unpleasant experience for a woman in this period of time. But if you're not really in tune with your body and don't understand the reason behind it, you may just plow on anyway and just think it's suddenly really strange that when you drink your favorite glass of red or whatever, that you suddenly your sleep is more disturbed and you might wake up in the middle of the night with a hot flush if you don't get one immediately upon consuming alcohol.
Yeah. And just on that, you mentioned red wine there. If red wine and beer actually have the most toxins in it of all of the different alcoholic drinks that you can have. So while it's true that having some alcohol at night may indeed help people feel sleepier and fall asleep, your sleep quality is going to be severely compromised. A lot of people mistakenly feel like alcohol is a good way to reduce stress and anxiety and to wind down from the end of the day. But sadly, what's actually happening is that you're pouring attractively packaged poison down your throat. You're disrupting your sleep patterns. You're disrupting your melatonin production. Your body is not fully rested. You don't spend as long in that deep REM restorative phase of sleep during the night. Which is why when you wake up, even if you've had seemingly 7 hours of, like, you think it's undisturbed sleep, and in most cases it is disturbed sleep, but even if you have 7 or 8 hours of undisturbed sleep, at least what you perceive to be undisturbed sleep, often you still wake up feeling tired and lethargic. It's because the sleep quality was compromised by that seemingly innocent glass of wine that you had before you went to sleep. You mentioned before about melatonin production and perimenopause. So just explain to us a little bit about how perimenopause affects the body's ability to create melatonin, which of course is the hormone that helps us sleep.
Quite simply, it happens in both males and females. So from the age of 35, our melatonin production decreases. It just goes on the slide. I don't have a diagram to show you, but I know that people like Dr. Jockers, Joeckers, has a great graphic on his website that shows you melatonin production. And so if you're not naturally producing the melatonin, you start to get the sleep issues. And so what you need to do is obviously to start learning how to encourage melatonin production and to do things like block your blue light and to help with the whole sleep process. And you basically need to learn how to sleep. I think we teach our toddlers how to go to sleep, but quite often we don't teach ourselves as adults how to go to sleep and how to create a sleep ritual so that we have a process whereby we set up ourselves for success at night. And that's what I'm really quite passionate about, is teaching people to really take the time and cultivate the space to acknowledge the importance of sleep on their health, acknowledge the importance of taking care of yourself, and really being a little bit selfish in terms of respecting yourself and the sacredness of your bedroom and the sacredness of a sleep ritual every single night.
Yeah. Walk us through your sleep ritual, Katish.
In our house, we've added little bits and pieces to our sleep ritual over the last sort of 9 years. And we add a new layer at a time because we like to experiment, and also we different changes in our lives. But for us, and I have two teenage boys, one who is an owl, he's a night boy, and the other one who's a lark. I'm a bit of a lark. I like to get up early. So I naturally want to go to sleep about 8:30 at night. But for us, the process of sleep starts around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. For us, it's about acknowledging that we're about to come into dinner time and we need to start to wind up all the busy activity of the day. I'm a little bit of a taskmaster when it comes to the evening in terms of going to be more and more difficult as my children get higher up in the high school grades. But at the moment, we have a ritual of like 6 o'clock is dinner, and you have to have had a shower by 6 o'clock, which is, I know for a lot of families is like, we're not even home yet. But for me, a shower before dinner starts to unwind the body, to relax the muscles. And there's something just so relaxing about the water for helping you get rid of all those excess energetic thoughts from the day. So you cleanse it away. And once we've had dinner, we have a rule of you have to turn off all devices. So The only time devices are allowed at nighttime is on the weekend, but normally all screens are off. We dim the lights. All of our devices are set so that the nighttime setting comes on at 5 o'clock. So we're starting to create that association with dimmer lights, less noise. We've got into our pajamas. We're more relaxed, and then we turn our diffusers on in all the rooms. Each of us have different sensory cues, so we all have our own customized blends that we use, and the diffusers go on to signal to our brain that these particular aromas are getting us ready to unwind to go to bed. And then because our bedrooms are for sleep only, there's no school desks in there. They're not for play either. So there's no toys in the bedrooms, and we don't have bright lights in there. We use salt lamps in the bedrooms or in the bathrooms. So if you need to go to the toilet in the night, you don't need to turn on massive fluoros or anything that jolts you back in. And then it's an hour of reading before bed, or listening to a meditation or a bit of sound music or binaural beats or a hypnotherapy. And then I'm quite mindful of making sure that a room has adequate ventilation, so it's not too hot, not too cold, and that the boys are set up so that we each have our own weighted blankets, as we like the feeling of weight. And then we either have an eye pillow or an eye mask. A mask or a pillow would be a whole lot easier than sticking your hand over there until it sort of falls off with pins and needles. So that just that pressure over you for your face helps go to sleep. And there you go, you drift off pretty much.
Hi there, this is James Swanick and you're listening to the Swanick Podcast.
You mentioned a couple of things there. I know you sell produce some products for that. Just a shout out to your website. If you go to shop.katish.com, Katish is KATISCHE.com. I think you sell some, you've certainly got a book there, haven't you? You've produced a book and you've got some essential oils, I think, for sleep. Is that right, Katish?
Yeah, I have an ebook that you can purchase. And it goes through the and identifies the particular essential oils that have sedative properties. So if you decide that you're interested in using aroma as a sleep-based tool, then there's a lot of oils out there and there's lots of different blends and types of essential oil aromas. And it can be like pouring money down the drain if you don't know why something works a certain way. And so I've created a guide which basically tells you which oils have sedative properties and why, and that way you can focus your money on buying the oils that have actually got sedative properties. So for example, clary sage has sedative properties, and frankincense and Hawaiian sandalwood. So my brain just works as I need to know the reason why something's good for sleep. So yeah, but there's a whole wonderful range of tools.
So grab that book, grab some of those oils, and then you can use a Swanick diffuser to actually use some of those oils. You were mentioning lights as well. We've actually got a Swanick company has come out with a light bulb here, which has stripped away all of the blue light, which is responsible for messing with your melatonin production. So,
perfect.
Yeah, it's a yellow. It has a little yellow bulb in nature, and then you put them in your bedside lights and it creates a very calming, soothing light, which is has no blue light in it. And then, of course, if you're watching this and you're an existing Swanee's customer, you already know this, but wearing a pair of blue light blocking glasses in the last hour or so before you go to sleep, wearing these glasses as well will continue to block out that artificial blue light that you may be staring into right now, quite frankly, if you're watching this interview on a phone or a screen of some kind. Putting that orange lens up to the screen there would block out that artificial light. Your body is then able to produce melatonin the way that nature always intended it to produce melatonin, as opposed to if you're scrolling through your phone, for example, and you're staring into that light, it's stimulating your pituitary and pineal gland, which suppresses your melatonin production. Another thing which you didn't mention that I would offer, Katish, is exposing yourself to as much natural sunlight first thing in the morning. Our skin has receptors in it, and when the sunlight hits our skin, you know, minutes after waking up, it tells our internal body clock, which is named our circadian rhythm, this is wake up time. And so our body floods with daytime hormones. There's a lot of cortisol actually in the first 20 minutes or so in the morning, which is good. We want that initially, but then after that, we want a very, very low levels of cortisol. And then if by exposing yourself to that natural sunlight first thing in the morning, in actual fact, 12 to 16 hours later, your body is actually then going to want to naturally start to flow with melatonin and start to prepare itself for sleep. Sadly, most people in the modern world will wake up and stay indoors for at least a couple of hours before actually even leaving their home and exposing themselves to sunlight. But if you can do it, even if you stand by a window, for example, and just let the sun come in and hit your skin for 5 minutes, that you will actually find that your sleep will noticeably improve.
I'm a big fan of that. Yeah, big fan of that. Sunglasses off when you first go out of the house in the morning. I preach that to a lot of friends. Take your sunnies off. we naturally go, we've got a Vigola, so let open that straight away in the morning to let that light in. Really important. I think that people overuse the sunglasses. You need to let that light in.
Yeah. We're talking to Katish Haberfield here, who is the founder of Reclaim Your Life with Katish. Why don't you give a little shout out there on your Facebook and Instagram and YouTube pages and website, Katish, before we move on?
Yep. So the easiest way to find me is katish.com, and then at katish.com it's got all the little icons that you can click on to go to my other social media accounts, but they're usually underscored Katish.
What's really the first step for a woman who might be watching this and who now suspects that they may have some perimenopause starting to kick in, but they're not sure? Like, how do they confirm that this is actually what is going on versus some other health issue?
Sure. Well, the first thing would be to just grab some awareness about your body. Start paying attention to the things that you're feeling. See if your cycle's starting to change. You can go to the doctor and ask them to confirm it, but they'll do a blood test. But to be honest, most obstetrician gynecologists and doctors these days will say the hormones fluctuate so much that I could give you a test today and it'll be different than tomorrow. So it's more about feeling into the situation, whether you feel any different, and then just being aware of the changes in your body. But a good place is to start. You can go onto my blog and read about perimenopause, or come and join the Facebook group and just ask questions from people. Just start the conversation. Hey, I've been feeling this. What do you think? Are you feeling the same thing? Because a lot of women, once you start to talk about this, they'll go, oh, my God, yes. I didn't really want to say it to anybody, but I've been feeling that too.
You mentioned you have two boys. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And how old are your boys, Katish?
One boy is turning 12 this week and the other is just about to turn 14.
Have there been periods of their life, like an age range, where you have found that as a mother you have slept better or slept worse, or your sleep has felt more challenged? You know, has your sleep progressively got better as they've got older, or has it been more challenged as they've got older? Like, can you speak to that a little?
I think that each child has a different personality. So my youngest has always slept differently to my eldest. My body rhythm changed completely when I had kids. So prior to having kids, I was the night owl. I was always up late. I like to read late into the night, and I wouldn't have any troubles with that. But as soon as I had my eldest child, he was awake from 5. And I just learned to be awake from from five, and so he's nearly 14 now, and my body has changed. I'm up. I can't sleep in. He can't sleep in. So that's fine. I've changed. The other one, the little one, has always been a very light and restless sleeper, and has always been a night owl. So for me, a lot of learning about sleep has been to help assist him fall to sleep. He's a lot more of a device kid too. So my next stage is obviously getting him a pair of Swannies himself, so that when he's spending time on the Xbox, he can wear his daytime Swannies. So that's my next purchase. So that he's we're reducing that blue light even in the daytime for him. I think
rocking a pair of the daytime Swannies, Swannies here with the clearer lens. You can actually see the blue light bouncing off the lens. You see how the blue light doesn't penetrate the lens? It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because there's no blue really on the screen that I'm looking at the moment. But in the reflection, you can see that it's very clearly blue. So the blue light that is being emitted from the screen is literally bouncing off that lens. So yeah, a pair of daytime glasses. And kids are actually, and children are most susceptible to blue light exposure, because as we age, we actually start to build more of a barrier to blue light. But when we're very young, that barrier hasn't really progressed. And so these kids who are staring into iPads or computer, staring at TV screens and staring into light, they're potentially doing a lot of not just physical damage to the eyes, but behavioral damage as well, because lack of sleep or poor sleep because of that exposure leads to irritability, and irritability leads to eating junk, crappy food, and eating crappy food leads to more irritability and so forth, and becomes this vicious cycle.
Yes, and I think that a lot of families will have noticed with lockdown, when the kids were at home here for that period of time and their entire school day was 8 hours on a laptop, it's hard for them to unwind after that amount of exposure. So they would have been a lot more helpful if they were sitting there with those laptops and the glasses on. I can tell you that now in hindsight.
Have you got a pair of Swannies, Katish?
No, I don't have a pair of Swannies. It's been one of those things, you know, where you walk the walk and you don't actually, well, you talk the talk and sometimes you don't walk the walk. So don't worry, we'll get onto it this week.
Until now. You don't have a pair of Swannies until now. We'll make sure that we get you there. For women who are watching this, and thank you so much for your guidance and expertise on this. We really appreciate you helping out our community, certainly the Swannies community. But for women who are watching this, what would be your overarching piece of advice for them, especially I think for a woman between 35 and 55 who may be experiencing some of those behavioral or physical changes that you referenced?
Yeah, so number one thing is you're not alone. Every woman on the planet goes through it, whether she's given birth or not. It's the way that you're designed. Two, change happens. It can freak us out, or we can learn to adapt and to surrender and go with the flow. And the only way that you can do that is to become more mindful about your body and your feelings, and take really small steps. Build yourself a nurturing self-care ritual every day, and in particular pay attention to your sleep, because if you can't sleep at night, then you're irritated, frustrated and crankier than normal during the day. You don't have patience with your children. You can't think clearly at work. And it's a self, it goes around and around in circles. So the most nurturing thing you can do for yourself is to build yourself a really beautiful nighttime ritual around sleep and really honor your need to sleep. And don't give in to the culture of busyness and compromise your sleep.
Wonderful. Katish Haberfield, thank you so much for your time and your guidance and expertise. I so appreciate you. Remember that you can learn more at shop.katish.com. That's KATISCHE.com. And you can find her on Instagram as well, which is _Katish. Maybe send her a message over there. tell that you saw her and listened to her on this show, on this episode. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Swanwick Podcast. If you liked what you heard, give us a subscribe, and while you're at it, forward it to a friend you think would benefit from hearing it too. You can find us on social media or at shopswanwick.com.